IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. Today we're going to be discussing about some of the recommendations of the 15th Finance Commission and what it means for the various states. I'm Anupam Manur and I have with me Pranay Kodastane. And for a change, our roles have been reversed. Today I'm going to be asking the bulk of the questions and hopefully I want to stump Pranay.
You have questions also. Yeah. I thought you were the one who had all the answers.
For most things, but not all. We're going to talk about the 15th Finance Commission. It's already riled up a few issues. We know how not all of the reactions has been exactly positive. There are a few changes from what they've been doing and so on. But before we get into any of those things, can we just set the context and say, what is the Finance Commission?
Okay, so Finance Commission is a constitutional body formed under the Article 280 of the Constitution. And it has many functions, but the main function is to decide on devolution of the taxes which get collected at the union level. So how would they be divided between one, the union government and the states, and then between states. So the first thing, how do the funds get allocated between the union and the state governments as a whole is called vertical sharing.
Right.
And then between the states is called horizontal sharing. So Finance Commission is basically a body which gets elected, which gets appointed by the president. It reports to the, submits to the president, by the way, not to the prime minister, right? So it is every 5 years they appoint a bunch of people. Mostly they are economists or people with administrative experience, etc. They sit together, they meet all state governments, they meet ministries, union government, etc. And after that, after a year or so, they will come out with a report. This report will have lots of things, but basically it will have this formula for sharing funds vertically and sharing funds horizontally.
Right.
That is what the Finance Commission. Once this report is submitted, it goes to the president. Generally, until now, this is the 15th Finance Commission. The main recommendation, which is on these two formulas, has been accepted by and large. Okay, and once this report is submitted, this Finance Commission is disbanded. So, I mean, they don't monitor any funds or how it goes. So that is what Finance Commission is.
Right, and so you're saying this happens once in every 5 years?
Yes.
And on what basis do they decide on this formula? So there must be a set of criterion on which they decide the different, divisions and so on. So what are those criteria?
Yeah. So all Finance Commissions have chosen slightly different approaches to this, right? So let's look at first vertical sharing. And then we'll go to horizontal sharing. Okay, so what decides how much should union government get versus how much should state governments get, right? So basically the Finance Commission looks at the revenue expenditure requirement of all state governments, looks at the revenue raising capacity of all state governments and union governments, and based on that it decides. It also looks at what spending is required. For example, in the 14th Finance Commission looked at the fact that the union government is spending a lot on state government functions,
right?
And that spending is increasing over the years, right? So it decided that that's not a good way to go. We should have more funds given to the state governments and then let them decide how it spends. So that was the approach, and that's why it made a lot of news, right? The total 42% of the divisible tax pool money was straight away going to state governments, and 58% was with the union governments. So that is broadly how the vertical sharing is decided. Over time, state governments have complained a lot to successive finance commissions that what happens is, remember, this is not the only way through which money goes to state governments. Union governments run their own things called centrally sponsored schemes, which are outside the purview of the finance commission. Earlier, you also had planning commission. So that was another different thing. Now, since planning commission is not there, it's slightly simplified. So the state governments told to successive finance commission that why are you doing these centrally sponsored schemes? Because first, PM takes all the credit, all the ruling party. Second, you are running a scheme which should be run. So health, education, for example, the bigger role is of the states, but union governments run this. So they were saying we want to decide our own priorities, right? So it's good if the union government does not spend on these areas by itself. Rather, it gives money in the form of cash, right? So the rightful share of the states, and then states pick up their own priorities,
right?
So over time, that has gained more currency and the vertical share of states has risen.
Right. And just to be clear, when you talk about this total divisible pool of taxes, this is income tax. This is all direct taxes?
Yeah. So income tax and corporate tax will be the biggest chunk of it. But of course, the state taxes, etc. are outside this, right?
That doesn't go to the union at all. So things like even property tax, etc., which is collected at a municipal level or a city level, that doesn't get counted towards any of this.
Yeah. Right? Even GST. So for example, state GST, there will be the state's own money, and then there will be excise duty, which will be a big some stamp duty. Tax handles which are available with the state government. So they don't go anywhere. One big one is agricultural income tax, which is with the state governments, and no state government wants to charge for it. But yeah, those are only with the state government. They don't get divided by the union.
Yeah. So this is, in terms of overall tax collection, this is still not the biggest chunk, right? I mean, indirect tax collection is slightly higher than direct tax collection in India. Is that correct? Or
yeah, but some of the indirect taxes will also be with in this divisible pool.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So anyways, the larger, this is a significant chunk of, because income tax and corporate tax make up a big
So chunk. With this greater devolution in the last few years, what you've been saying, you still have a ratio of 42:58.
Yes.
And now it's come down to 41 because of J&K and so on.
Yeah.
That still seems highly skewed towards the union government, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And that's what I have been talking about. So a lot of time people play this zero-sum game that, you know, this state got more. And so the focus is on that horizontal sharing which I think it's a useless game to fight, because whatever you do, you will have equity considerations coming in. It's not as if a state can be given zero funds because they didn't do some fiscal performance or all that. So that will remain. We should focus on the vertical sharing and focus that more the pie available with the state governments rises over time, because clearly union governments are doing a lot more which are outside their domain.
Yeah.
Let them do what is supposed to be done by them.
Right. So, let's again get back to the original question which I had, which is what are the different criteria for now horizontal?
Yeah. So, sharing. Horizontal sharing broadly, different finance commissions have used different formula, but basically four considerations are used, and you can have different proxies for each of them. Okay. But the four major ones are need. So basically, if you have bigger population, you will get more money. Right? Second one is equity consideration. So even if you are a poorer state, you need to be helped more on certain counts. So equity considerations come into being. Third one is efficiency. So sometimes they use considerations like, you know, have you performed well on tax effort? Like this finance commission has used, if your tax effort is good, you have raised more taxes, done more on that count, you will get some weightage for that. And the final one is fiscal performance. So sometimes there have been some considerations about whether you have stuck to a particular fiscal criteria, you have not, your debt has not increased significantly, all those. Do you meet all these considerations, then you get. So it's a mix of these four factors in different weightages. So some finance commissions have considered, for example, forest cover and ecology, right? That comes into this idea of fiscal performance, because you can't use that land for any other purpose. So you might want to use that for I'll correct myself. It is used for efficiency considerations, because you want to incentivize the state to have that forest, but you can't use that land for any other purpose.
So you're kind of compensating the opportunity cost of keeping forests as they are instead of just using the timber and the land for other.
So different finance commissions have used versions of this. Weightages keep changing, etc. But broadly, you will always have a significant weightage given to need and equity considerations. Right?
Okay. So the standard kind of pushback against even these considerations, criticisms, not necessarily mine, but you know, you read anywhere, and the standard criticism is that you're giving the wrong set of incentives to states. For example, if you give larger kind of devolution of money to states with a bigger population, then isn't that the standard criticism is that you're incentivizing states to have a larger kind of population. Similarly, based on need, then again you're disincentivizing at least good performance, right? I mean, in the sense that if a country, if a state has grown rapidly, then the amount of money it gets from the center or from the union rather actually decreases. So that's another standard criticism. Or you could even say there is, if I'm not mistaken, there's also a special consideration based on revenue deficit, right? That the 15th Finance Commission this time at least is giving out funds for states which have huge revenue deficits. But again, aren't you then disincentivizing states to manage their deficits better? So is this a position where you're creating a wrong set of incentives for state, or do you just look at it saying this is not the place to, you know, talk about population measures, etc.?
I mean, you know my position. It is like, why would you want to optimize for several things at once? So what are these funds meant for, right? So as Dr. Rao, who's like, who's the expert on fiscal federalism in India, it's like, he talks about this, right? What are these general purpose transfers made for? These general purpose transfers are made to provide comparable levels of services at comparable tax rates. Okay. So that is the aim that we want, objective that we want to meet. All these considerations that we are talking about, incentivizing this or that, they, you can incentivize so many things, right? That will never end. So look at this from this point, okay? Now, if the population has increased, remember the individual is the unit of the constitution, fundamental unit, right? So technically, you should be able to provide the same amount of money to each person, where irrespective of where that person is in India.
Right.
So you have to look at it from that angle. The states are entities which have been formed to satisfy diverse preferences, but it's not the fundamental unit. So how can you make this argument that we will provide funds on the basis of, say, 1971 population today, when your aim is to provide comparable levels of service at comparable tax rates, right? So it doesn't make sense at all. I think you should not even look at population, because two reasons. One, Finance Commission is not Family Planning Commission.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not their job to look. And second, I think more population is a great asset. I mean, we should get out of this mentality that there are more population is a problem for states, and yeah, India is problematic because we have more population. Come on, China became China because it had more people. It had cheap labor that it could manufacture lots of things, right? So we have to look at it as a strength. The way I would put it, this is, so by the way, this finance commission did consider demographic performance. Yeah. So what it did is, some weightage is given to 2011 population. So that falls under this criteria of need, right?
Yeah.
Assessing the need. But it also gave weightage to demographic performance. So it is inverse of fertility rate. So if your state has reduced fertility rate, you will get more funds. So this is what they have used. And basically, they have moved towards a family planning commission.
Yeah.
I think that shouldn't have been done. The way I would want to incentivize states, if I had to on this, was actually give some weightage to in-migration. So if there's a state which has taken in more migrants, you should incentivize it. So that way, you are looking population as an asset. You're looking people at an, as an asset, not as people whom you want to just turn away. And then you will always end into this idea of just reduce people.
Yeah, that's, I think, the standard talk on any issue with regard to public policy, right? I mean, when you have this talk, everyone would say the problem is overpopulation.
Yeah.
But I'm always tempted to use your own line on this, which is overpopulation is not the problem, under governance is, right?
Yeah.
So on just that front, it also means that if, just expanding on your own idea, if you give a, you know, some weightage to this in migration as one of the criteria, then it also means that obviously you're providing a higher level of public services and public goods, and also that there are economic opportunities available, etc., and which is why people are coming into your state in the first place. So you're kind of rewarding good performance in that overall sense.
Exactly. It's moving us towards the right way to look at things for the future, right? You're not looking population as a problem then.
Yeah.
People are voting with their feet, like you said.
Exactly.
So if more people are migrating to a state, it means that the state is doing much better than their state of living. So yeah, that is, I think, an indicator of whether the markets are working there, whether the economy is going in the right direction. So if I had to incentivize, I would have incentivized this.
Right. So let's come to this particular 15th Finance Commission report, which was tabled, I think, even as part of the budget speech. Now, this is an interim report. This is not the final report. Is that correct?
Yeah. So generally, as I said, they give it for 5 years, right? But this time, because our economy is in deep trouble, they decided that there will be an interim report for this financial year. And the next year, they will come up with a full report. And I think it's not a bad thing to do, because our economy is in real trouble. So whatever formula they would have used now, next year they would not have been able to meet those commitments, etc. So they have just done
given that. I mean, not just real trouble, I mean, yes, real trouble is one big aspect, but also a lot of volatility and uncertainty, right? Nominal GDP growth projection by itself has come down now. It was 7.5%, it's projected at 10, which of course won't be met. GST collections are low, direct taxes are not really keeping up, because obviously nominal GDP is not as high, and therefore I think making any form of projection for the next 5 years based on the numbers now is just going to be futile, right?
Yeah.
So which is why that 1 year extension has been given, which also means that you can expect considerable changes in the final report as compared to the interim report.
I don't think the broad terms of reference will not change at all, but the formula that they have decided, 41% or so, I don't see any significant changes in that.
Right. So let's just go on and now talk about these 2011 numbers that you said. Is that also old enough? I mean, shouldn't it be a lot more recent?
Yeah.
I mean, 2019,
ideally,
20?
We should be talking about this year's population.
Or
right?
Even because projections into the future.
We have
right?
to provide for the next 5 years.
Yeah, it's not forward-looking. Yeah. It's still backward-looking 10 years back.
But that itself is a victory hard one, right? Because a lot of people are saying, because you have to reward population reduction, you should give money based on 1971 census.
Oh, dear.
Which I find entirely undemocratic way of looking at it.
Forget about 1971. I'm saying 2011 is too old already to base any form of considerations. Yeah. But there you have it. I mean, that's probably a separate this thing. So one of the things that came out a lot in, I mean, you know, your typical newspaper headlines is that Karnataka was one of the big losers of this 15th Finance Commission. I mean, of course, there is Kerala. There's also, I think, Uttar Pradesh also loses out and so on. So can you give me a sense of what this winner and loser are? I mean, how do you win? How do you lose? I mean,
yeah, so let's look at horizontal sharing now.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, we should recognize nothing has been done on the vertical sharing. Okay,
right.
So that 42% has become 41% just because you have one less state. So that money which was used to go into the state kitty is now with the union government.
So on the broadest level, what you're telling me is, if you're looking at winners and losers, winners still remains union, losers remain all states put together.
Yeah, exactly. And so, then within the losers, you will have some who will lose
lost
more.
Lost more and some who lost less.
That's
okay. So let's get that thing absolutely clear.
So until and unless you increase that pie from 42% to, let's say, 45-50%, you will have this sense of someone losing out. Even there, you will have, if you increase, there will be redistribution is a reality, right? Like, I'm from Mahadevpura constituency, there is redistribution from my constituent ward to your.
Hey, excuse me, we are a very rich ward, okay? BTM level.
But no industries are there in your ward, okay?
So, services, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. That doesn't go to BBMP. Okay. So anyways, so that redistribution happens, and that will happen in, but the feeling that I am losing out will decrease if all states get more money compared to what they got last year itself, right? So then that feeling will go away. So we have not gotten to any change in vertical sharing, which means there are winners and losers, and people will always talk about that. So majorly 5 states have lost out on the horizontal sharing front: Kerala, UP, Karnataka, Telangana, and Andhra Pradesh.
Right.
out of these states, there is something called a revenue gap grants. Basically, what the Finance Commission will do is they will assess all revenue expenditure requirement each state government gives it to them. And then they will cull some things off which they think are not expenditures. They do their own criteria. And then they also do an assessment of the revenue receipts.
Right.
And then if there is a gap in between, they will give some grants for this, which is called revenue deficit grants. So, in by the way, when this Finance Commission was formed, the Union government had also mentioned, should these grants be given at all? Whereas nothing like this is talked about when we say on the Union government. No one asks why the Union government is spending more. But anyways, this Finance Commission went ahead and gave revenue deficit grants. So, these two states, Kerala and AP, even though they lost out, some deficit was made up through these revenue gap grants. But Kerala and Karnataka, the problem with them was that even after you have this devolution and revenue gap grants given, the money that they got is less than last year's.
Right.
29-20. So, the Finance Commission actually recommended that these two states be given a special grant over and above revenue deficit grants and the devolution money to make up for this deficit. Okay, so this was 5,000 crores for Karnataka and around 700 crores for Kerala. And the Union government has asked that Finance Commission should reconsider this because it is, in their view, it is introducing a new consideration at all. And some it might become a new thing which subsequent Finance Commissions will also have to deal with. So
right. That
is what broadly, that's why they are sort of this feeling that they are losing out.
But is that a common thing to happen where the Union government can ask the Finance Commission to reconsider?
Generally, it doesn't happen on these main formulaic grants.
Right.
Okay, so Finance Commission gives a very thick report which has lots of things apart from the formula which the Union governments don't agree to. But on these formula, actually, they have till now accepted all recommendations. So this is quite a special case. And I think the Finance Commission should go back and say that, you know, this is, we have considered, but we want to go ahead with this.
Right. So Karnataka lost out, if I'm not mistaken, also because it shown the greatest amount of per capita income growth in the last 5-6 years. And it's catching up with the state which is the highest per capita income, which is Haryana. So there's something called an income gap.
Yeah. So it is called income distance.
Income distance.
So this is another way to look at, I told you four parameters, right? Equity efficiency, fiscal performance, need. So look at it. This is an equity parameter. So what it is saying is, if you are a rich state, you get less, you are less dependent on Union government transfers, you can take care of yourself. So Haryana is the richest state, the richest big state. So you measure income distance from Haryana's per capita income. Okay. So Karnataka actually showed the biggest jump. And its income distance from Haryana has become quite low. And this parameter has the biggest weightage, by the way,
right.
Nearly 45% or so.
Right.
So because of that, you will end up with lesser
funds, and therefore they gave this special kind of.
Yeah. And by the way, overall for Karnataka, the ballpark number of all union transfers is around 25% of its total expenditure size. Okay, so. You should know.
Just to put things in perspective, yeah.
So we are talking about that 25%. Within that, how much it's going at. So
this time, they also gave special sectoral-based grants. And I don't see why they're doing that. If the Finance Commission is just about devolution of funds from the center to the, I mean, from the union to the states. And then, you know, you're saying that let states have their own priorities and the union should not be judging any of the priorities of the states, right? But then the Finance Commission is giving special sectoral grant, which means there aren't they judging on behalf of the states? I mean, the priorities on behalf of states. I think they have, for example, their special sectoral grants for police training, modernization and housing, railways, maintenance of roads under some Pradhan Mantri, whatever, Gram Sadak Yojana, etc. So no one would say these are not important. But again, if the whole point of it is that states have more money and then they decide what to do with that money, then it seems somehow antithetical that the Finance Commission is deciding what's important.
It is. And actually in this interim budget, they have given grants for nutrition, but subsequently they will give grants for these other areas as well. And it's not new. previous finance commissions also had these sectoral grants for forest cover, 200 crores or something like that. You know, they used to give. 14th finance commission was a deviation. They decided that they are not going to give any sector specific grants. But with 15th finance commission, you're going back to that idea, yeah, that sectoral grants. And I think they don't make sense a lot.
Right.
First of all, finance commission, remember, they won't be here after they submit the report. Okay. So there's no one to monitor this. I see a lot of these arguments whenever you go to finance commission. They should give money for how states do well on climate change, how states do on environment. But the finance commission is just six people and their secretariat, right? And they will go after the formula is decided. So how do you expect them to evaluate, monitor and decide for something? It's not going to happen. So the expectations are unreal. And that's why these things come up. I think the better approach would be, one, yeah, you reduce the number of centrally sponsored schemes, give more money to the states and let them decide. And even if you have to give some sectoral specific grants, merge it with these centrally sponsored schemes we have. So it can be outside the finance commission. Right. And for those centrally sponsored schemes, why is a specific purpose grant given now? So that you can ensure at least a minimum standards of a particular service is met. So to do that, first you need to identify what is that minimum service to be met, right? Which we don't do for any of our schemes. So yeah, it's just based on utilization. So you're Kerala, you have utilized all your funds on education, you will get more money on that. So we have to fix that, which is outside the finance commission, rather than introducing new sectoral grants in this.
Right. So this just reminds you, you know, this kind of specificity, that wasn't there at some point talk about creating a special fund for defense and national security that doesn't go into this divisible pool, which is then devolved to the state. What happened to that idea? Did it die a good, painless death? Or?
No. They have said that they have formed a committee of various ministries and they'll come up with that recommendation probably in the full report.
But along with the finance commission itself
will look at it. Okay. So finance commission has constituted. That is also really one nasty thing, right?
Exactly.
So what the union government is saying this, that, you know, we provide defense. It's a union list function. But the defense is, the beneficiaries of defense are state governments as well. So why can't state governments contribute to this? This is what I say when we say the problem is with the vertical sharing, right? Now, it's the duty of union government to provide defense. If they want to create a fund, they could have done it even now. They don't need finance commission to recommend this. In fact, we have funds for NREGS. We have a fund. We have funds for Swachh Bharat course. We have for education. Yeah. So they can do that on their own from their own dime. But they don't want to do that. And they want to say that, you know, oh, states also get benefited. So why don't you contribute?
But they use a similar logic on individuals, right? First, they tax them for, and ultimately taxes are for some form of provision of public goods. And then they have a separate kind of cess on those taxes for specific purpose things. So they put a cess for cleanliness, which is an overall hygiene and public health, which is anyway supposed to be, you know, part of that thing that you're going to use from the taxes. So and so they're just using that same kind of twisted logic here as well, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this defense fund thing is probably unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Because it could be contested on these grounds. Like, how can you ask funds for union list from state governments? Yeah. And it sends a wrong precedent also. Tomorrow, your union government will say, you know, we need a new fund for doing some other thing.
You could have a separate railways fund, you'll have a separate road fund and so on. And then ultimately, it'll become another budget exercise. Yeah. It's just completely nonsense. Any other big takeaways from the 15th Finance Commission?
No, vertical sharing formula didn't change. In horizontal sharing, you had some winners and losers. One good thing was that they did give revenue deficit grants, which the union government was saying, you know, reconsider kind of a thing. So they stood up against it. Defense, we don't know what's going to happen, the defense fund. And they have introduced some criteria for there was one more talk about measuring fiscal performance. The union government had said that, you know, are the states doing things which are aligned with this new India 2022 and all right. that, right? So I think that has not found anything in this finance commission, which is good.
Good, so, yeah. So let me then end with the bigger question of all of this talk. When are we going to ever even begin to talk about devolution of funds from the states to the municipal and to rural panchayats and so on?
I don't know when. Because our state finance commissions, no one asks.
They're
no
a joke.
Right? We don't even know that it exists. So yeah, they hardly function in any of the state governments. And that is the real deal, right? When you're talking about decentralization, you should know that first of all, you need to give productive tax handles to local governments,
yeah.
which itself we won't do because 73rd and 74th amendment give the rights to the state governments to decide whether they should actually give some tax handles to the local governments. And public choice theory will tell you that state
of
governments
they would
never
give.
Will. So we are in that very low equilibrium state at the state level and local governments, which the Union Finance Commission can't do much.
Yeah, by now we should have been talking about a strong Bangalore with its own revenue structure and revenue streams rather, sorry, and its own expenditure yeah. based on its priorities, a strong mayor and so on. But we're so far away from that, that you still have a union government which is deciding on the base on, you know, on behalf of cities. And it, that just seems like...
Anupam, our state assemblies meet for less than 30 days in a year,
wow.
on an average. Okay. And that too, 15 days out of it are spent on discussing the budget.
Right.
So all that you do for your state assembly elections, you end up appointing MLAs who are only working for 15 days doing the legislative function. So if that is the equilibrium that we are at for our assemblies, you can, there's no surprising that our state finance commissions don't work and then many of the functions don't take place. So we need more attention there and we need to focus on that instead of just hammering away at this point that, you know, this state got more, this state didn't get.
Yeah. That's a broader point here. All right. Thank you so much, Pranay. Thanks everyone for tuning in and hope to catch you in the next episode of All Things Policy.
Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach Podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.